All right, everyone, if you could help me in welcoming Andreas. Andreas is a core maintainer of P2 Panda. He's going to be giving a presentation on walkway systems. These are infrastructure independent P2P architectures that allow applications to switch seamlessly between internet, mesh, and other transport layers. So if you'll help me in welcoming Andreas, everyone.
Okay, cool.
Try that again.
Hello, yeah.
Sorry about that, everyone.
Yeah, so the walkaway stack, that was this this term which was brought up during the DWeb seminar, which was an event I helped organizing in the Internet Archive in San Francisco last year. Yeah, about me, my name is Andrea, so ADZ on the internet. I'm a musician and developer since a long time. And yeah, as we already heard, I'm also one of the maintainers of P2P Panda, which we started like also roughly 6 years ago. Cool. So this is basically like a kind of like a mini compressed version of this lecture I try to give. Some concepts might be known to you, some others not. And bear in mind, this is a theoretical framework. It will be rough on some edges. So most of the time, we want to send a message to someone, right? So here we have Bobby. Bobby wants to send a message to Daphne. We have the message here and Bobby. And Bobby probably wants to send it over, let's say, the internet. And you know, they send the message to a server or to another node. And then what we usually want to do is like, yeah, we want to process that message. We want to look at it. Does it look correct? Does it have the right shape? Then we want to store this message in a database, and then we want to do queries on that database to then finally render it into the UI. So now, of course, now we want to move this into a peer-to-peer space, and there we don't have servers, and maybe we want to use other authentication strategies than like checking your email address if it's valid or something, or your phone number. So what we use is public key cryptography. We sign the message, we attach the public key to the message, and now wherever that message arrives, we can now check that signature, and we can say, okay, cool. This message actually has integrity. It's a guarantee we gained now. The integrity guarantee is no one has tampered with the contents of this message while it was underway. The other thing we also gained is provenance. We know where that message came from, or like authentication. These are like guarantees we gain from this, and this is, I would say, some like base guarantees we want for like a walkaway stack. Of course, now we need other systems to map Bobby to actually that public key, but this is another problem. And because I'm trying to paint a model here, let's try to like make this even more abstract. So yeah, we can say somehow this message of Bobby needs to be sent, right? So it needs to be sent over something I would call the connectivity substrate, like the internet protocol or a USB stick, or, you know, like, we don't know, it doesn't matter, but it somehow needs to be sent. And this message, that's our data type, right? Like something we define. And then we can now even more simplify this into, let's call this bottom part the event delivery layer, because this is like the thing which brings the message to somewhere. And then we want to process this. This is on the event processing layer. This is another simplification. And then finally, we have the application on top of that. Cool. And now some people happen to like local first things very much. And in local first, we always want to do everything like right on the machine locally. That basically means that now everyone turns into a server, every computer, edge devices including. And we want to store the data there. And the problem which we have to now also think about is when everything is stored on your machine, like, is that, you know, you might be missing out on someone else's data. And that can especially happen when there is network partition or network fragmentation, literally things like there is no internet. So now we end up with like an inconsistent state of the system because Daphne didn't get the messages of Bobby. Yeah? And then now we have a problem. This can be easily solved with something like people call a sync protocol or like a replication protocol, which is basically like two peers asking each other what they're missing of each other, and then, you know, it's usually expressed as some sort of state vector, and this is enough information for the other peer to compute the difference between these two sets to then send the missing messages to the other party. And what we gained from this now is like eventual consistency guarantees, like these systems will now converge to the same state, and that will make everyone in the local first world happy. Now, if you look really close to what we've just done, it's actually already a CRDT. So CRDTs can be very complicated to understand, but this, what we just saw, was already a CRDT. So we have a set of messages, like all the chat messages, which can be sent in this group, which were sent in this group in that system. And, you know, eventually everyone will see all the chat messages, right? And it also kind of doesn't matter in which order they arrived. They will be just sorted by timestamp afterwards anyway. And also it doesn't matter if they arrived multiple times because, you know, like we just ignore that. So here we have a very simple CRDT already. It's called a grow-only set. And that's interesting, right? Because we're suddenly in like this world. We didn't even notice that we did it. And I think many of you implemented these things and maybe accidentally already implemented the CRDT. Another terminology I introduce here is a replica. So now we have suddenly like replicas, which are basically like the local view on your state, and now we can talk about like peers having replicas of this data. There's different CRDTs, very simple ones, but they're all really interesting. Like the grow-only set we looked at, a last write wins map is kind of like a key value store where the next item will overwrite the other one. There is the append-only lock, which is something people also call a hash chain. That's a linked list where the next item points at the previous one. And then you can have that also expressed in a tree where multiple items can point at the previous one. And then you end up having a directed acyclic graph or a hash graph. These are all like nice basic CRDTs. And there's proofs that they are actually function also like CRDTs. They can converge, and they have the same properties we want mathematically from them. So let's extend this model a little bit now more. So now our event delivery layer suddenly became suddenly got a sync protocol. Yeah. So now it's not only connectivity substrate like the internet protocol, but now we also express a sync protocol on top of that, and we can kind of agree that might be on the event delivery layer, right? But then at the same time, the sync protocol is pretty closely tied to the event, to the data type we are syncing with, because you might want to sync a DAC differently than an append-only lock, differently than a set. There's different strategies there I'm going to talk about later. But we have to pick some data type, and we call it in the walkaway stack, I call it like a base convergent data type. It's basically like this core data type, and it can be one of these or maybe something else, a Merkle tree or whatnot. And this brings me now to an even more simplification of this model, which looks like this. So we have an event delivery layer, as I mentioned, the base convergent data type, and then we do the event processing on top. And this is getting now quite interesting if we start like thinking about applications like with this like sort of model. Let me walk you through it. So we start with the event delivery layer. Some concrete connectivity substrates we could pick here is like we just heard Iro, could use Valid, could use the Tor network, I2P, you pick your favorite substrate to like connect to peers and exchange messages. There's different sync protocols I mentioned already. Depending on your data type, there might be different efficiencies you gain from them. For example, for sets and maps, there is the range-based set reconciliation by Alyosha Maya, and the Ribbles is like something with bloom filters. and the block height comparison. That's a very simple strategy to compare the state of two append-only locks and then compute the diff. I'm going to talk about this a little bit more. But you see, like, there's already kind of like a little zoo of things we can do. And maybe the thing I want to point out here is it kind of is important what base data type you pick, because it kind of influences the replication protocol and therefore also your event delivery layer. So they're kind of somehow tied together. And then now we can also look at this base convergent data type. And you know, some people are like, yeah, I mean, append-only locks are nice, but like, or sets, but I want a graph. My answer to that is, yes, that's cool, because they're completely unrelated. Your base convergent data type is just a carrier of your data. And then you express other data types on top of that, right? It's a little bit like the IP packet or the datagram, right? It's just a carrier of something. And we can understand them similar, like here as well. It's kind of like a carrier of any information we want, including graphs or Merkle trees or whatnot. So we can sync DAX over append-only locks. And you see, this is basically like some sort of like enhancement of my message. So this base convergent data type now gives me the cryptographic integrity through a hashing function, the provenance through a digital signature algorithm, and it protects now my payload, and what we gain is all of these guarantees, and then on top even eventual consistency for our like local first world. Okay, let's move up to the event processing layer. So now we are observing these messages coming in, right? And some people might call it event sourcing. In any case, we usually want to observe these events, and then we want to materialize state on top of that. We kind of like, you know, a message comes in, says like, create this thing. Then I'm creating this thing. I put it into a database, you know, and someone comes around the corner and says, I update that thing. Then I change the value in the database. This is usually where my materialized state lives. And then I want to have queries on top of that for my application to, again, render it to the UI. What is interesting with event processing is, and this is, I think, what I'm very excited about, is we can layer the concerns, and we can enhance our data types with certain processing methods which enrich my data in a way so I can then get even more guarantees higher up the stack. Oh God, I used the word stack too much. I don't want to sound like OSI model or something where you have these layers. This is a much more pluralistic, much more, much more colorful world, I think. But in any case, some data types you want to enhance with certain features. Here, we basically introduce something where I describe predecessors. So I point with like a vector clock, which is cryptographically secured, to like past items, and now suddenly we composed on an single writer append-only lock, we composed a multi-writer directed acyclic graph, right? And with this information, I can now express a processing pipeline, which again does the same thing. My message arrives in the system, I validate it, does everything look fine, is the signature correct? And then now I can do ordering and like a topological sort. I can check, are my dependencies met? If not, wait, if yes, forward it. And then I end up with a topologically sorted, serialized sequence of my events. And then I get my partial ordering guarantee, which is also called causal ordering. And that's awesome, because literally every CRDT kind of needs that. And so once again, we are in a world where systems can converge, they can be fully decentralized, and we can still get the guarantees that we eventually will end up in the same state. And all of this through like some nice layering and kind of optional extension of my data types. Some need it, some others don't. And this maybe is an invitation to kind of think about it as like a general class of things we might be able to compose. And there's many problems we have in that space, many, many problems. It's not only ordering or signatures or integrity checks. It's things like access control, permission management, capabilities. Think about, of course, attacks on these systems. So we need to worry about Byzantine fault tolerance. We we need to think about garbage collection, so data shouldn't grow forever, but we at one point also want to get rid of it. These are like forms of coordination. We want to do key agreements. We want to agree on secret material so we can, have a shared key and then encrypt data with it, and so on. So there's a lot of things we can do on that layer. And this is, I think, which is interesting. It's completely detached from event delivery, right? This is like its own complete ecosystem, almost like a state machine we can just describe as such. I think this is a little bit like a provocation to like existing CRDT frameworks. I think there's a future where I don't need to opt into a whole ecosystem of like a super CRDT, but actually I just want the text CRDT part. And everything else can be done by other frameworks. And maybe this even will be pluggable and interchangeable depending on my needs. We're not there yet. This is just an idea, but I think it's personally quite exciting. And then we were finally at the definition of a walkaway stack. So the walkaway stack is basically like moving all of these application concerns up to the event processing layer. And then we can move away from the event delivery layer whenever we want. And this is really beautiful because now we are not dependent on the technical infrastructure that layer imposes on us, and also maybe like the politics around this technical infrastructure, including internet shutdowns and censorship and whatnot. Someone in the seminar called it power imbalances as well. So you choose your own power imbalances because we're always exposed to systems where there is some sort of like power dynamic going on. But maybe if our applications don't break when we move to another system, then we have something like walk away and we choose our own power imbalances. So this is a little bit the idea behind it. Cool. And now I talked a lot about direct connections, the internet, and so on. But I'm also here, like in a room where there's a lot of like people doing mesh networking. And now I want to combine these two worlds and see, like, okay, aren't they actually the same in some way, if we think about it? So in a mesh network, usually, I'm taking a very radical example. I have an antenna, and this antenna is just broadcasting, right? It's just like I send data, I just emit it. A little antenna sending data. Yeah, and it sends the data and it spreads. It's a little bit like you throw a stone into the water, and the ripples of the water just, move. And at one point, that little wave will hit another antenna somewhere here. And message received, right? We have a one-directional communication happening here. And then we sent an answer, and the answer comes back in the same way. And here we go. We have our same scenario again of some communication between two parties, like Bobby and Daphne. Okay, so now how can we get eventual consistency guarantee? How can we make this local first? As I just said, we want to converge to the same state. At one point, every peer has to see every message, right? This is the guarantee we want to achieve. How do we do this? We could literally just repeat the message all the time until maybe everyone has it. We don't know if they're going to have it. We don't have any form of acknowledgement. But I can just do like best effort. I just repeat it forever. And that works. Of course, that's a fine synchronization protocol in a way. The problem is here maybe the more data you created in your application, the more crazy it gets because now you have to repeat all of these things all the time. And there's an answer to that. Use an append-only lock. An append-only lock is like a strictly ordered sequence of items. And I know my current state because I am at the sequence number 3. Daphne is at sequence number 1. Now I know that Daphne is missing 2 items because we can literally just compare these 2 numbers. And this is something where we can simply just do by broadcasting our current height of the lock. And Daphne just broadcasts, hey, I'm at like lock height 1, and I received the signal as Bobby, and this is enough information for me to compute the difference between this and just reply. And I do this until no one says anything anymore, basically. No one announced their lock height anymore. This is already, now we're already in exactly the same space I just mentioned before, and with the help of append-only locks. There's other strategies as well, but this is like one example. And very concretely, This is done in the project called TinySSB. You can check it out. And TinySSB goes even that far to do like packet radio over shortwave with Skywave bouncing over the Atlantic Ocean with append-only logs. There, of course, like we all have the problem now, as soon as we move this world into mesh networking, we might have too much data in our payloads. So we need to be smart with like what do we actually want to send. TinySSB also has some interesting ideas of like a form of compression where we omit kind of like redundant data we can actually also just compute ourselves because it's deterministic. There's an interesting project. You should definitely check it out. Okay, so now the mesh networks learn something from local first. Now it's the other way around. How can we make internet or IP-based like stacks more like feel more like mesh networks? So in of course on the internet we always think about direct connections, but we can express basically broadcast overlays on top of that. We heard that already before, something like IRO gossip, and this is like a very interesting sort of provocation also to developers to think in these dimensions of like, okay, what if everything is broadcast, right? Underneath, we still maintain direct connections in our system, but the high-level abstraction is broadcast. Yeah, exactly. So this is like my provocation. Is it the same? Maybe not. Maybe we can actually express this in this high-level sort of API. So we just subscribe to a topic, organize ourselves around like an identifier, and then I just get a TX and RX, like a way to send a message, a way to receive a message, and this is just like some sort of like almost like a broadcast interface. This is very simplifying, obviously. We need to do so much more, also in terms of privacy and security, but I think it's like a provocation in this direction to think about these systems more from this broadcast angle, even when we are on the internet. Another thought around walkaway is something some people call relays, some people call support nodes, some people call store and forward. This is like something we also want to have in these systems, and we can actually also leverage quite well from mesh networks, is we want to relay data, of course, by intermediaries. You know, like you are in a protest situation, there is a building around in front of you, but there's some people on the other side of the building. How do you get around that building? So it is basically what you do is you relay from everyone's smartphone, basically from everyone's like Bluetooth low energy capable devices around the building until the message arrived. This is some sort of relaying problem. And this is awesome, and we want to have it all the time. So basically what I do is like I have my message, I encrypt it in a way because I don't trust like any intermediaries to intercept my message. So I need to encrypt it beforehand. It arrives on these relays, and they're just forwarded until it finally arrives at the receiver, which is basically Daphne again. And the property we want here is like this sort of, I mean, fairly dystopian scenario, but I think a very important one is relays can go down, and we want still this network to somehow still be able to communicate even when things get really shaky. One idea we can maybe combine things with is like, of course, how do we agree on the symmetric key right in the beginning? I think like people from Meshtastic, they usually like do some handshake in person. This is some sort of side channel where you agree on that key. And then afterwards, you get into your like secret communication. We could also use the direct connections, actually, when we still have the internet, to use the CRDT to coordinate a key agreement. And then when we go out into the mesh world, we could then use that key to continue talking. So this is like a very concrete example. I think Call is also doing a lot of work here in this direction. This is a little bit like a map I try to paint. You see, this is a very theoretical approximation of a very vast space. There's a lot of stuff missing here, which doesn't fit on this slide, but I think we kind of have a lot of things already happening in all of these directions, but maybe there is much more space for like actual interoperability and collaboration across projects from this like mesh sphere the local first sphere. I think it's definitely possible. Yeah. Cool. So thank you very much. I think this is it. Yeah.
Yeah, we have time for one or two questions. Does anyone have anything they want to ask? Well, with that, let's give another round of applause then. Thank you very much, Andreas. Thank you for showing us this. And if you do think of questions, feel free to find him after and talk to him.